Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. The reason I'm playing rock and roll today is because you don't care about 9/11. And there's a new mood in America. The president, the Department of Homeland Security, say that we're not at war with Islamic fundamentalism. In fact, that there is no war on terror. It's a war on hurricanes. And it's a war on natural disasters. So I think that I want to be a good boy and get along and go along with the government. And I'm not going to mention 9/11. I think it's unpatriotic in this Obama time, in the time of Obama, to mention 9/11, because it's an affront to liberalism to remember 9/11. Now, it is true that some of you are throwbacks and you remember 9/11. You remember World War II, you know, quaint things like that. You even remember things like the Revolutionary War, Civil War. But you're the throwback Americans. You're not the new Americans. The new American has no history at all. Most Americans are not Americans. In fact, if you are an American, you're un-American, according to the Obama administration, because you believe in America. And anyone who believes in America should be investigated immediately by the Department of Cass Sunstein Security. Because the new czars and the new appointees of Obama believe that if you actually believe in America too strongly, you're probably suspect in the sense that you may be a threat to the government. And so, therefore, we shouldn't remember 9/11 at all. I think it's very important that we forget 9/11 as quickly. Illegal immigrant rights. We should talk about health care for everyone on the planet. We should talk about higher taxes on the rich. That would be anybody who earns a living. We should talk about anything except clip 14. Listen to 14. And don't hold it. Hold it. Stop. I'm about to play for you audio from air traffic control tapes released June 17, 2004 by the 9/11 Commission. You're about to hear one of the hijackers, presumably Mohammed Atta, trying to pretend to be the captain of the plane before he crashes it. Listen to clip 14, but hold it. You didn't hear this on the Savage Nation. It's just a secret between us. Go ahead. Now, you see, there was an intelligent gentleman. That was Mohammed Atta speaking for the Obama administration. As he was hijacking the plane, Mohammed Atta pretended to be the captain, and he told the passengers, nobody move, everything is okay. If you try to move, you endanger yourself and the plane, let's be quiet. In other words, leave it to government, leave it to the authorities. And that's the new ethos of the Obama administration. Don't say a word. Don't move. If you try to say a word, you endanger yourself in America. So just hush, hush, my darling. That's the new way in America. Okay? Now, here's another one from another hijacker that could become the new ethos of Cass Sunstein. Clip 15. Now that I can't understand. Turn it off. All right. Now he tells the people on the plane that they shouldn't move. They shouldn't try to stop them as hijackers. Many of us feel as though America has been hijacked, by the way, by this government. I don't know how to tell this to you, but I get emails all day long from people who are having nightmares about being homeless. Their houses have been taken from them. Their children have been taken from them. They're penniless. Why are they having these nightmares? I don't know. I really have no idea. Because Obama's a healer. He's a uniter. And all of the good people around them, all the czars, you have to trust them. Although no one vetted them, although none of them went through any congressional screening or FBI investigation, you have to trust that they're all good, that they mean well. And that would show that you're a good American in the new America. Otherwise, if you're distrustful of the government, by definition, you should be investigated. You should never distrust government. Well, it was true that when Bush was in power, you were supposed to distrust government. But now that communists and socialists and anarchists are running America, you should trust them because they told you so. Look, for example, they love Fidel Castro. They can't get enough of Fidel Castro. They glorify Fidel Castro. Wonderful, superb individuals like the movie director Steven Spielberg, whose ancestors fled the Tsar of Russia, whose own father fought in World War II as a bomber pilot. Steven Spielberg loves the dictator Castro. Now, it is true that a man in Cuba dared say while drunk that he was that they could use food, and that instead of waving flags, he'd rather have a good meal, and that Castro put him in jail for 2 years, and his sentence was just upheld. Don't tell that to Steven Spielberg, because it would embarrass him. And the last thing you want to do is make sure that the Leni Riefenstahl of the Obama administration is uncomfortable. I suspect that Spielberg will become the Leni Riefenstahl of Obama and do some kind of heroic footage of him entering a stadium somewhere with American, well, universal UN flags waving, whatever, shot at certain angles to make him look more noble than he isn't, making certain that the ears don't show in a certain way because that's un-American unto itself. I mean, if you notice that Obama has large ears, you're suspect. If you are disgusted by Nancy Pelosi sucking on candy with a fixed smile while Obama speaks and you feel as though you're in a nightmare, a sort of communist Chinese training film, you're also suspect. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? Do you get it? So that's why I'm not going to do 9/11 today, because if I do, I might be investigated for being patriotic. And patriotism, as you well know, is suspect in the new America. Now, you do remember New York fireman Mike Moran. I hope he's still around. Listen to clip 18.
Our friends, our neighbors, our relatives, they are not gone because they are not forgotten. And I want to say one more thing. In the spirit of the Irish people, Osama bin Laden, you can kiss my royal Irish ass.
Yeah, up the British, that's what I say. Then there was the genius from Hollywood, Richard Gere, who wanted compassion for the hijackers. As you well know, he has compassion for furry creatures, and so therefore he had compassion for the terrorists themselves. Listen to clip 19.
I think in this situation right now, when we have the possibility of taking this energy, this horrendous energy that we're all feeling, and the possibility of turning it into more violence and revenge, we can stop that. We can take that energy and turn it into something else. We can turn it into compassion, into love, into understanding. That's apparently unpopular right now.
Yeah, it's unpopular. Unpopular Richie from Brooklyn, huh? Where'd you learn that, Richie? The oil cloth, the seltzer got to you? What was it? What got to you, Richard? Too much carbon dioxide from the seltzer? You know, I'm starting to think that the obsession with carbon dioxide amongst liberals stems back to all the seltzer that most of them drank in the kitchens of Brooklyn and the Bronx when they were youth. It could be that the seltzer, which, as you know, is a result of carbonation, the carbon dioxide got to their brains and they have a sort of toxic reaction to seltzer. And it's not really a global warming that they're against. They're really against seltzer. Let me think about that. I'll be right back. That was Hillary Clinton after 9/11 being booed because many people blamed her policies, her husband's policies, and of course the current policies are the same, in creating a climate of pacifism, a climate of pacifism that led to 9/11. Now, I, of course, don't believe that because that would be unpatriotic. And as you well know, I absolutely don't want to be seen as, well, I actually do want to be seen as unpatriotic in a way, because to be seen as patriotic by Hillary Clinton and Obama and Janet Napolitano was actually quite dangerous. So I declare I am not patriotic. Actually, the more I think about it, it's good not to be patriotic in these times. I think you should embrace a terrorist, like a New York Times reporter who went over there, and although a British commando died to free him, the New York Times is not apologetic, nor do they in any way say thanks to the grieving family, because one journalist is worth 1,000 white trash soldiers to them. You don't understand how they think. A journalist is an elite, distinguished, evolved human being. A soldier, cannon fodder. You don't understand the New York mentality. They are in a class by themselves. They're as close to God as you can possibly get. Well, they don't believe in God. I mean, as close to the gods, let's put it to you that way, as one could get. That's what a journalist is to himself or herself. And so therefore, although a soldier died, it was nothing. One commando for one New York Times reporter, it would have been worth 1,000 to pinch Sulzberger to get one of his... He was told not to go in there. They told him, don't go near the Taliban. But see, he was a lib. Liberal reporters believe that the evil ones are the... Well, let's put it to you this way. Liberal reporters believe that the only evil on the planet is the white male heterosexual Christian, and that the Taliban are simply expressing a grievance against the oppressive West. And since they have those sensibilities, somehow the Taliban would understand that they're one of the good guys. It's sort of like a liberal going into a bad neighborhood feeling they can't be mugged. They have sort of a special dispensation. And so if they go into a very dangerous neighborhood, they're sure that a gang member won't hit them. In fact, they can't be hit by a bullet. They're protected by a sort of invisible shield. You get the picture, don't you? So they booed Hillary Clinton for having established the mentality that they feel opened us up to an attack, you know. But those were just emotional times, not like today. Now we're in the hands of a rational lawyer who understands everything that the world has ever needed and that the world will ever need, a man by the name of Barack Hussein Obama, a man who knows that if you embrace a terrorist, they cease being a terrorist, that if you embrace them and hug them and tell them that they're good, they will become good, that like a child, a terrorist needs to be told that they're not a terrorist, that if they're told that they're good and decent and wonderful, in fact, superior to the people that they hate, they may not attack you. Of course, you can even become them. You could take on their religion. You could take on their laws. You could take on their way of living. You can oppress women. You could perform surgery on women. You can have your own courts and throw out the U.S. Constitution. And in that way, the terrorist won't hate you anymore. And that's what this administration is working on a regular basis. So in the sense that 9/11 brought America to this point where we are becoming them, and the them, by the way, now owns, let's say, 18% of Fox News, 19% the last I checked, which explains why Banned in Britain is never discussed by the lipstick girls. And if you look at the investments that Saudi Arabia has made, and the other wonderful gentlemen from the Middle East around America, and I mean investments in congressmen and senators, if you look at the investments that they've made in congressmen and senators, you'll understand why we are living through what we're living through. And once you do, you'll come to understand that it's not long before you'll be on all fours braying to the Middle East. That's all. That's all you have to know. So get a pair of knee pads and get ready, because here it comes. And as you well know, there have been other terrorist attacks since 9/11. You just don't want to remember them. Let's bring a few up. I don't mean the one in London. Ah, that was not the one in Bali. No, no, no. Not the one in India. Remember India, Mumbai? You used to know it as Bombay. Then it became Mumbai. Now you don't remember it at all. Remember when the practitioners of the religion of peace distorted the religion of peace and set off bombs in that beautiful old Victorian hotel and killed so many people in Mumbai, India? Well, that's been swept under the collective rug as well. Because in order to make the terrorists go away, you hide under the covers. And you also sweep their crimes away, and eventually you forget that they have done many things. For example, remember Seattle? A practitioner of the religion of peace attacked Jewish women, killed a few of them. Unarmed women were killed, shot in cold blood. You don't want to remember a thing like that, because if you do so, three things happen. you become upset. Two, you misinterpret what actually happened. Three, you have sympathy for Zionism, which you can't, according to the new ethos of Obama. You must not have any sympathy for Zionists or Zionism. And now, although Martin Luther King Jr. said that, make no mistake about it, anyone who claims they're anti-Zionist is anti-Semitic, you must forget that as well. You must remember only what you want to remember from Martin Luther King Jr. And although he understood that the racket was the left would say, I like Jews, but I'm anti-Zionist, he knew what that meant. Because people used to say that they're not against blacks, they're just against certain blacks. But he knew that that meant that they were all anti-black. Same thing with Jews. They call themselves anti-Zionist, but they really mean anti-Jew, anti-Semite. Now, Martin Luther King said that, but you shouldn't remember that, because if you do, you never know what might happen to you. You might be thrown out of the PTA. So here we are, 9/11, 8 years later, and it means nothing to America. Certainly doesn't mean anything to Ellen DeGeneres, because she's going to be on a dancing show. Certainly means nothing to the hermaphrodite who won a race, because what does 9/11 have to do with a hermaphrodite winning a race? It means nothing to Serena, the tennis star. What's important is that she's a tennis star and that you see her hitting a ball. That's what's important. Or Heidi Klum. What's important is you look at her bathing suit pictures. Or that kind of thing is what's important today. Moloch has to make money. And the only way Moloch makes money is if he gets you to look at semi-nude pictures in his newspapers and magazines. And occasionally he throws you some of the, you know, lipstick girls talking about serious stuff that no one listens to. They're all hoping that one day some, whatever, that's all. But if you want to talk about 9/11, go ahead. Go ahead, call the Savage Nation. If you want to talk about Richard Gere getting booed when asking for compassion, or Steven Spielberg loving Fidel Castro, it's astounding to me how this happens. I still believe that the red diaper dopa baby is not really that much afraid of global warming. It's a sort of psychosis of seltzer. The more I have thought about it, since so many liberals from New York believe in global warming, even though all the evidence points away from anthropogenic causes, meaning man causing global warming, sunspots, volcanoes, or whatnot. They want to believe that it's being caused by man because they hate carbon dioxide. Why? Seltzer. It's all traced back to Brooklyn and the Bronx. It's the seltzer man who should be arrested.
Savage.
Eight Septembers have come and gone. Nearly 3,000 days have passed, almost one for each of those taken from us. But no turning of the seasons can diminish the pain and the loss of that day. No passage of time and no dark skies can ever dull the meaning of this moment.
There goes my heart. There.
People are freaked out, the health debate and illegal immigrants. It came up, you know, that's when Republican Rep. Joe Wilson freaked out and screamed, you lie, when the president said that illegal immigrants would not be covered in any proposal. Now, of course, they're not immigrants. They're illegal aliens. That's the correct word. And they're non-citizens. They don't pay taxes. And more citizens, illegal residents, are losing health coverage. So people are rightly saying, why should you give benefits to people not here legally? Where do we get the money from? And so Obama said that they're not going to get any health care, which, of course, is a double lie for two reasons. First of all, they already get health care. I am a person who's been in the emergency room last year a few times, and every time I've been there, I see wonderful gold-plated health care for illegal aliens, including, by the way, translators. They must have translators available. And if a doctor or nurse asks about their so-called immigration status, they can get arrested. You know, this is the kind of compassion we need. So the illegal immigrants know how to work the system because the white libs teach them how. They teach them how to work the system. In fact, they boast about working the system. That's why the system is broken, because the white liberals have worked the system like Acorn. That's an example. White liberals created Acorn to work the system. work the system, welfare, etc. So this did come up. But the problem here is this. You may say that you're not going to give illegal immigrants health care, correct? But how are you going to do that if you're not allowed to screen whether they're citizens or not? Fact of the matter is it's a double lie. The fact of the matter is that you need a verification system in order to determine whether or not illegals are illegal. And so to say that illegals won't be covered is a double lie by Obama. You need a verification system to find out whether a person is a citizen. Now, the liberal criminals argue that such a verification system would add a layer of bureaucracy and cost. Now, that's a laugh because all of the health care reform is adding layer upon layer of bureaucracy and costs. And they know that. They just don't want to verify illegal immigrants. And so there it is. What can I say to you? We're living in a triple set of lies. And the fact is you're paying for it. And the fact is that emergency rooms are broken. And the fact is that hospitals are going broke across America. And the fact is that one of the principal reasons our schools are melting down is because of the cost of English as a second language and the special education for them, for the illegal immigrants. So understand that the budget disaster that we're facing right now is related to actual reasons. And the health insurance argument is all about illegal immigrants. You don't know that. It's all 90% of this is being pulled by La Raza because about 60% of illegal aliens had no health insurance in 07, right? So who do you think is pushing Obama to make certain that there's health reform? The illegal aliens. And they don't pay for care. Social workers rush to sign them up for Medicaid the minute they walk through the door. And legal residents, of course, have to pay for their care immediately. Let's say you're a 28-year-old construction worker without health care, and you bang your thumb with a hammer and it's broken. If you go to an emergency room, you have to pay for it with a credit card. Now, on the other hand, if you put on a sombrero and make believe you can't speak English and changed your name and demanded a translator and an ACLU representative, it would be illegal to refuse for them to refuse to treat you, and it would be illegal for a nurse or a doctor to transfer you based on your inability to pay. So I'm suggesting that you go into an emergency room if you are an American citizen and change your name and start speaking in a broken English and tell them that you're not a citizen, but if they ask you that you may arrest them or have them you may sue them, and then call up the ACLU. But you'll get immediate health care for free. You understand that? You don't understand that. Well, I hope you do one day. I know that's a long way from 9/11, but is it related to 9/11? Yes, illegal immigration is related to 9/11. How? Simply because the very liberals who are now running America brainwashed the society into a false compassion, a false tolerance, which said that all immigrants deserve compassion. All immigrants come here to work. They conveniently will not reflect on the fact that 30% of all prisoners are illegal immigrants who committed felonies. I'll repeat that. 1 out of 3 prisoners has committed a felony in our prison system. Did they come here to work? Yeah, they came here to work the system, rape, rob, deal drugs, whatever. So the liberals said you can't check their immigration status. The immigrant, therefore, could come through the border unchecked, or he could fly a plane into the World Trade Center after waltzing into the country. How? Very simple. The lib wouldn't let the police do their job. It is well known that FBI agents were onto the 9/11 hijackers weeks or months before, and that Jamie Gorelick, a factotum of the Clintons, Jamie Gorelick prohibited sharing any information between the FBI and police agencies. Where is Jamie Gorelick today? What is she doing for Obama today? Does anybody know where she is? You don't know where she is because these moles, these left-wing moles, dig so deeply into society, into the governmental apparatus, you don't know where they are. We just have the results of their wonderful work. So that's why I say it's not worth talking about it. I think I have said everything I could possibly say in my life. Do you understand about liberalism and about illegal immigration, about terrorism? And all that happens when I tell you the truth is I get into deeper and deeper trouble. Countries ban me. Things like that happen. You're certainly not interested in my book, Banned in Britain. Why should you read my book, Banned in Britain? Do you realize that if you go to my website, michaelsavage.com, and you actually order Banned in Britain, you might be put on a terror watch list? Of course, I'm joking. That wouldn't happen in a free society. But then again, we are not living in a free society. Most people feel that they're living in a prison camp. Most everybody I know is having nightmares that they're going to lose their possessions, their income, and their children to this increasing totalitarian state. And of course, if they continue to have these dreams and the government hears about that, they may have to be given psychiatric care and medication and be put into special treatment facilities in the healthcare reform program. Because the model for the healthcare reform is based upon Cuba, England, Canada, and the ex-Soviet Union. It's a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And if you like the dental work in England, take a look at their teeth. If you like the cuisine of England and the dental work of England, you're just going to love Obamacare, because that's the kind of dental work you're going to get. And maybe there's nothing wrong with teeth like that. I don't know. Why do they have big teeth in England? I believe it has something to do with the ancient diet, biting their enemies in battle. I don't really know where it came. Their teeth are larger, generally larger. Watch out when a Brit laughs. You have to, like, back up 10 feet. So here we are, and the world goes on. So, do you want to talk about any of this, or what? Am I going to talk to myself? Play music for me now. I feel I'm spacing out. Give me some rock. That's nice. What is this? Oh, the Sea of Love.
The sea of love.
Who's Bill Phillips? Who's Bill Phillips? Who was the girl actor, the woman actress in this movie with Al Pacino? She was still good looking when they did the movie. Ellen Barkin. Whatever happened to her? I often think about, she's still operating somewhere? She's trying to nail another Madoff-like guy. She always marries perfume magnates or whatever. All right, turn it off. Headache already. Migraine. I got to tell you what happened last night. I'm going to back off into a personal now. Since it's Friday, and you forgive me my personal indulgences every once in a while, you're not going to believe this. Last Friday, I remember I was complaining about ears, humming in my ears for a couple of days last week. Really, it was like I was inside a swimming pool, you know, like that, like something over your ears. Okay, I had that for days. So I go to an ear doctor last Friday, and he looks in my ears, and he takes the opportunity to clean my ears, which was disgusting. I didn't ask him to clean them. I just look at him to see what's in there. He says, well, while I'm in there, and he pulled out wax that looked like I'm sorry to bore you, it looked like the size of a small fly. So I said, that's what caused the humming? He said, no, but I couldn't see beyond it. Now that I can, there's nothing wrong with you. So I said, okay, great. All right, so you go home. I relaxed on a four-day weekend. I took time off from radio, and it went away. It truly did. It was all tension. It was nerves, right? Something happened inside me. Nerves do get to you with what I've been through from the lib attacks. Wait a minute. I swear as God is my witness, you should be struck dead by lightning if I'm lying, as they used to say in Brooklyn, even though I'm from the Bronx. You should be struck dead by lightning, not me if I'm lying. But anyway, it's an old bad joke. I swear, last night, 10:30, 11 o'clock, it was a sort of like hot night out here in California. I go out to walk the dog, and there were like moths. It was so hot that like moths were flying out of the shrubbery next to the front door. It was like eerie. And one of them, I bend down to put the leash on the dog. A moth flies in my left ear. I swear to God, there's a moth. Like, did you ever get a moth in here and try to get it out and it won't come out? You grab it and you can't grab nothing? Nothing. Can't grab anything. And it's flapping its damn wings, and I'm freaking that it's going to burrow into my brain. I swear to God. And I'm digging and nothing's coming. I'm saying, God, why are you doing this to me? What's the message? Why is there a moth in my ear? I swear to God. And I'm digging and pulling and I say, I got it, nothing. And it's still flipping, flapping these big wings inside my ear. And I'm freaking, it's going to go in. Oh, God, darn. And I don't see. I'm pulling and yanking and I'm throwing on the ground. And I look and there's nothing on the ground. So I got a freak show. I get the cell phone number of the ear doctor. I call him. And he was nice enough to take the call. I told him what happened. I said, I don't see the moth parts on the ground, but it's not flapping in my ear anymore. I said, could it get in my head and penetrate my brain? He said, no, it can't. Well, I got to tell you the truth. I mean, I put a Q-tip in there. There was a teeny bit of blood. I'm not trying to, like, gross you out here. So wait a minute. Now I put the whole thing aside, and I said, you know what? God's speaking to me. I still have – I'm a highly educated man, but – and there's a big but. I'm extremely mystically oriented about events. I still have, like, a primitive part of me that has is a mystical streak, like dream interpretation. I guess that's from the hippie days, the – searching for the plants, living in the Fiji Islands, drinking Yangona until all hours of the night, and you know, Amdo, and drinking with the Fijians and sitting on floor mats and seeing spirits and talking to spirit healers. But I didn't get it from that. I had it earlier than that. I had the spirit thing back in Harlem when I went to all black Abyssinian churches, and I was the only white guy because I used to like to get into the spirit of the thing, and I felt the spirit more there than I did in the Episcopal Church or the synagogue. So what can I tell you? There's always been something spirits. So therefore, I said to myself after the Morth experience in the ear, what is God telling me? Why is God doing this to me? What is the meaning of a losing my hearing like in a drum last week, and this week a Morth flying? And it's like one in a billion that this would happen to me. How could a Morth get in my ear, and why? God's telling me something. Now, I know what it is. I have very, very strong suspicion about what it is, but I can't tell you. So I'll be right back.
Savage.
Devil or angel, I can't make up my mind. Which one you are, I'd like to wake up and find.
I slept good last night. I don't know about you. Nightmares like every other night. I actually look forward to them. People, I don't go to horror movies because I have every night is a horror movie for me. No, I look forward to sleeping because it's incredibly interesting. Wish there were like electrodes and wires I could attach to like a camcorder that would record what I dream. I wouldn't ever have to like get up in the morning. I mean, I could just run it all day. Just broadcast it on my website. I've had zillions of listeners for that one. I forgot what last night's dream was. I don't remember it all. Just the Morth in the ear freaked me out. I slept like a baby. I don't know. I don't understand it. I'm very resilient. I get knocked down. I get depressed. Then I get up again, and I'm stronger because it's the beautiful part about being an immigrant son. Whatever happens to you in this country, in this life, is nothing compared to what went on in your ancestors' times in Europe. Nothing. This is nothing. You know, it's really nothing. I mean, you add up the whole picture of your life. Earwax, this I got to take. I knew it. 1-800-449-8. I can't believe it. Sacramento, KSTE Country. Lance, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, this is the Moth in your ear speaking. Now, how soon will Steven Spielberg move to Cuba to enjoy Fidel's healthcare paradise?
There you go.
I'm not yet ready to love Fidel's revolution.
Oh, he's probably going to do the Lenny Riefenstahl of Fidel.
There was a World War II pilot, but my father was only a co-pilot seated to the pilot's right.
How could a boy whose father was a pilot in World War II, how could he wind up being such a commie? No answer.
Man.
All right. I should have given out a free book. I forgot I'm giving them out. Medford, Oregon. Michael, welcome to the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
It is an honor and a pleasure.
Thank you. That is so nice to hear. That made me feel good today. What's on your mind?
Part of the reason why you have earwax is to keep bugs out.
I know. And when he pulled it out, I said, wait, doctor, before you pull it out, all my life I've been told don't remove the earwax. It's a protectant. You know what he said to me? He said you need a thin film of wax, not a plug. Is that true?
Well, that's what I remember from high school biology.
Well, he's the ear expert, so I didn't argue with him. I don't like it because I told him, here's the thing is, this is gory. I just got to get it over with. When I was 5 years old, again, it goes back to my fear of doctors and my distrust of the medical establishment. My mother, God rest her soul, made a few errors. One of them was she took me to a quack there, Dr. K. I can't mention his name because his family could sue me yet. One of them could be a lawyer. They went in for some reason or other. And, you know, he's looking in my ear. All of a sudden, I was little. She was big. She held me down. Get him now, she said. Get him now. He's squirming. Get him now. And while I'm down, they had a tube in my ear with water squirted in and stuff came out. And I said, what did they do that to me for? I never trusted my mother or a doctor ever since. Now, what they did was they took the earwax out. I was told years later they never should have done that. You got to leave the earwax in. What do they remove the wax for?
Well, like I said, you know, from high school biology. I remember that.
Right. I said earwax the same thing. So here it is. A week later, a bug goes for it. All right, let me send you a free copy of what? Band and Earwax?
Oh, yeah, well, are you writing on that yet?
No, I have not written Band and Earwax yet. if you can name the book, you'll get a free copy. Band in?
I'm sorry, Band in England.
That's right. Banned in Britain. You get a free copy. Stay in the line. God forbid you almost said banned in Ireland. Ooh, I'm not banned in Ireland. I'm going to Ireland, I think. I feel like, you know, in the Midnight Cowboy, it's like going to Florida. Like, remember, you wanted to go to Florida, the land of sunshine and orange juice. I'm going to go to Florida when the humidity lifts, like October. I got a nice autumn planned. God, it's a nice autumn. I got a Navy League event. I don't do anything. I got a Navy League event. I got the Cambridge Union debate I may do. I asked who was going to be on my side. They look like they're legitimate. I'm probably going to do that. Then I'm going to go, I think, to Florida. Then I'm going to go to Washington, D.C. from Florida to be at that conference the end of the month. It's on my web. Is it still there? Godric, is the ad still up on my site? Yes. Bottom right, there's an ad for a great conference on freedom of speech. I don't make any money from it. You should look into it. There's only 400 seats. It's in the Congressional Auditorium. How do you like that? Can you imagine that? You talk about justice. That's going to be real justice, me speaking on freedom of speech in the Congressional Auditorium. The only speech I'm going to give this year, I give no speeches. I haven't given one in 4 years, unlike some in radio. Every Friday they fly out, they have a fill-in, and they give a speech for $75,000 and they go home. Yeah, yeah, love America. Give me a hand. Put the flag around me and make sure the green is in the kitty. Yeah, 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 them liberals will get you. Give me the flag. 75 Gs, 45 minutes in and out. I want corned beef and cabbage when I get on the tarmac. And yeah, yeah, love America. I'm here for you. Don't worry about it. That's all. I don't do such speeches.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The ships that go sailing.
Our friends, our neighbors, our relatives, they are not gone because they are not forgotten. And I want to say one more thing. In the spirit of the Irish people, Osama bin Laden, you can kiss my royal Irish ass.
God, I wish he was president of the United States. I'd sleep better at night. I wouldn't be having these nightmares. There'd be no moths in my ears. Welcome to the Savage Nation. What's this? Who's in the background there?
Bobby.
Big deal. Hey, no, I don't want to get sidetracked. That's nice. It's nice mix, but I got distracted from the firemen after 9/11. That's when America was at its peak. We were united. Look where we wound up. Take a look. 8 years later, look what we have now. We have a Department of Homeland Security. Listen to this. This is right out of 1984. You talk about double talk, double speak, news speak. Department of Homeland Security is created after 9/11 to make sure that domestic terrorism is quelled before it gets a grip, right? Mainly You know who, okay? The big unknown, you know who. But instead of going after domestic terrorists, the Department of Homeland Security says last 2 months ago, there's no longer a war on terror. We're looking at hurricanes and natural disasters. We can't say terror anymore because that unto itself is passe and Republican. So instead of cracking down on Islamist extremism, they're cracking down on hurricanes. Instead of killing terrorists, the Obama administration is going to dinners with them. Instead of hunting them down around the world, he is appeasing them. Instead of referring today that radical Islam was the problem on 9/11 and that our troops in Afghanistan are still fighting radical Islamists, the president is blaming America. The president is saying that it is we who are at fault. Instead of saying what we, the American people, think, he's telling us what the Arab street thinks, meaning the people in the streets of these nations where there are no freedoms. Can you believe this? Radical Muslims around the world can spew hatred against us, but the government will not even publish a cartoon that mocks them. And instead of protecting us, those of us who abide by the law, they won't even profile would-be terrorists. Instead, white nuns in a wheelchair are frisked by the Homeland Security Department because they may have some shampoo in their pouch. Instead of confronting the hate mongers in Saudi Arabia, our president bows down and gets a gold chain put around his neck by the king of Saudi Arabia. Instead of talking about the hate-filled Wahhabi cult as the core of the world's problems, the president says to Israel, stop building settlements. Instead of talking about our great civilization and our great advances and our scientific discoveries, the president glorifies Middle Eastern civilization, which has produced nothing since they gave us the zero. Instead of supporting the incredibly brave men and women in the CIA, this administration under Eric Holder attacks the CIA. Do you hear what I'm saying to you? And that's the world we're living in today. And I can go on and on and on and tell you that this administration is dishonoring the dead of 9/11. They're whitewashing our enemies. And if we permit this to go on, tell me who's going to win. Who's going to win at the end of the road? Tell me who's going to win at the end of the road. That's why it's a very hard... This is a hard job, because the more you tell people the truth, the more you are hated by the government. The more you speak out against this despotic regime of the Obamas, the more you are called names by the left-wing communists in the media. You think I don't know what's going on? And why was I targeted? Why was I the first to be thrown on a list with terrorists in Britain? Why? I'll let you figure out why. Now, all you got to do is add up who's not talking about it. You'll see why they haven't been targeted. That's all. So I'll take your calls and let you do the hard work. Kansas City, Jeff, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Savage, to pick up on your thread about Spielberg and his embrace of Castro's regime, I just wanted to make a point that I want you to name me one single big Hollywood manufacturer that has displayed Stalinism and his genocide and his atrocities and what was perpetrated on the Russian people, why that is completely swept under the rug. The American populace is completely ignorant.
Right. There were two socialists fighting each other in the 30s that led to World War II. Hitler, the National Socialist of Germany, and Stalin, the Socialist of the USSR, correct?
Correct. But
so you're asking yourself, why was Hitler's brand of socialism condemned, which it should have been, but on the same by the same token, why was Stalin's brand of socialism not condemned, and why is it never condemned today? The answer is, you have to go back to the 30s. Will Durant was a reporter for the New York Times who actually glorified Joseph Stalin. Do you know that?
Yeah, they called him Uncle Joe, if I recall, correct?
There you go. Well, what can I tell you? The Stalinists are running the universities. The Stalinists are running the left-wing press in this country. And we are right now surrounded, and unfortunately, by too many of them in the Obama administration. This is not to say all of the people in the administration are socialists or Stalinists, but a good too many of them are academic socialists. You know that, and I know that.
Absolutely, and it's disgusting.
No, it's more than disgusting. We're on the verge of losing all of our freedoms. Do you know who just got confirmed by the Senate? Cass Sunstein. Do you know who he is?
No, that's one I haven't
heard. Oh, God, I'm afraid to touch the story. It's too painful. The head of regulatory affairs over all bureaucracies in America was confirmed by the Senate today. Does anyone know who Cass Sunstein is? Raise your hand if you do. You win a free copy of Band and what?
Britain.
Oh, you got it. Stay on the line. Band and Britain, not Band and Ireland. You got Sunstein? Listen to this man. Oh, wait. I want you to listen to this man. This is a Yale law professor who does not like the U.S. Constitution. He does not believe the Second Amendment applies to Americans. He does not believe that the men who wrote the U.S. Constitution were good men. He says they were elitists because the he actually wants to revise the entire U.S. Constitution on his own because he says it was written by white males, not by people of color, and not by women. Listen to this.
My coming view is that the individual right to bear arms reflects the success of an extremely aggressive and resourceful social movement, and has much less to do with good standard legal arguments than appears.
Good standard legal arguments. You know, my friend, you may think you're educated and smarter than me, but you're an ass. Sunstein, you're an ass. Let me tell you, there was a British essayist in the 1800s who wrote the following. He said, "The law is an ass." One of the great essayists of all time, his name was Samuel Johnson. And, you know, he wrote that when he said the law is an ass, knowing that a man like you would arise one day in the United States of America, thinking that you were oh so superior, that you're going to rewrite all of the amendments to the Constitution because you are so damn bright. What is it, the carbon dioxide of your boyhood finally coming to roost? Is that what it is, Cass? It was the oil cloth, the chemicals in the oil cloth and the carbon dioxide that did it to you? Santa Maria, Uriel, you're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, it's an honor. I'm an unpatriotic son of an immigrant. I agree with about 99.9% of the things you say. This is my first time listening to you, and I just think you're absolutely correct. I'm 30 years old. I have no health insurance.
What's the 0.1% that you disagree with me on?
Oh, I kind of like Michael. Michael Jackson was okay. He was a druggie, and his music might have not done
much. Wait, hold on. I didn't mention Michael Jackson today, so something's wrong in what you're saying. You said this is the first time you've listened to me. But you don't like my comments on Michael Jackson, so wait a minute now. You're fibbing, aren't you?
No, let me clarify. This is my first year listening to you.
All right. Okay, that's fair. Yeah, all right. Michael Jackson was a fabulous performer, but he didn't deserve the hero worship of that the media gave him. We can split the difference on that. Uriel, you're getting a free copy of Band in what? Graceland?
No. No. You know, my wife was a fan, and she kind of got me hooked. And, you know, if you love
So what
wife,
is it, Band and what? What's the name of my book that you're getting?
Oh, it's Band and Britain. Damn with the Brits. I don't buy French fries, and I don't buy anything made in the U.K.
Did you say Band and Bahrain or Band and Britain?
I said Band and Britain.
I need to laugh. All right, stay on the line. You know, I made a decision. I'm going to tell you what it is. I'm not going to push the book much longer, and I'll tell you why. I decided that I'm going to do one print run and no more. I'm not going to talk about it. I'm going to run the print because the book won't be out, I think, now by till the end of August. I'm sorry, the end of October. And I'm going to do one printing of 5,000 copies. It's not a big seller. I'm telling you point blank. And that's going to be the end of it. I don't think I'm going to reprint because it's enough already. I don't like selling books. I don't like selling anything. It's exhausting. It makes me feel cheap and poor, and I don't want to do any of that. So here's the thing. If you want a copy of Band of Britain, do me a favor, order it in the next few weeks. I'm going to do one printing and Goodbye Charlie. And it'll be a classic, and you can give to your grandchildren, and it'll be on the Roadshow, the Antiques Roadshow, 25 years from now. Here's a copy of Band in Britain by a radio broadcaster from the last century named Michael Savage. How much is it worth? Well, by that point, it probably will have been burned by the administration of the future. I actually expect there'll be a giant book burning in America at one point, and the liberals will be behind it. That's why I love the movie Fahrenheit 451. It was so ahead of its time. Who can name who wrote Fahrenheit 451? I can. Anthony Burgess. Is that correct? Oh, Ray Bradbury. I always can. Thank you. Godric, you got that one right. Only I could have an assistant by the name of Godric. The short version is God. Old English name. Can I divulge, guys, the relationship now or not? Am I allowed to say anything about it? Beowulf? No, I'm proud to announce, this is amazing, Beowulf Rockland has been my producer for years, and he's really terrific. He's very literate. He knows arcane knowledge that you can't believe. So he has an old English name, Beowulf. About a month ago, I hired his brother, Godric Rockland. They both have wonderful old English names, and the short version of his name is God. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I'm a walking in the rain. Tears are falling and I feel a pain. I wish you were here by me to end this misery. And I wonder,
So a fascist lawyer from the University of Chicago Law School, a mentor of Obama, Cass Sunstein, and I'm using the words very selectively, he is a fascist legal scholar of the most dangerous kind, has just been appointed regulatory czar of the United States of America. My good friend Professor Ellis Washington has written an article on Cass Sunstein called The Heartlessness of Ideas, which will be up tomorrow, in which he goes into the background of this man, and you have to understand what Obama is doing to you. Yesterday, Cass Sunstein was confirmed by a Senate vote of 57-40 as the new Director of Regulatory Affairs and Information. Now you say, what the heck does that do? He regulates all laws, past, present, and future. Regulates all laws. He can rewrite them. And the fact of the matter is, this man is going to rewrite the history of America. Now, you knew that last week Van Jones got thrown out because he was very dangerous, and he was a very, very dangerous man and slipped into the White House by Obama. He got thrown out. But the far more dangerous man is Cass Sunstein, who believes animals should be allowed to sue their owners. He believes that the Second Amendment should be eliminated. He believes in so many things that are bizarre, you'd ask yourself, how could Obama have appointed him to such a position? The answer is because Obama sat at the feet of Sunstein at the University of Chicago, just as he sat at the feet of Reverend Wright for 20 years and then said he didn't know Reverend Wright was saying those things. He sat at the feet of this man for so many years at Chicago, and he hopes he will one day be on the Supreme Court. Rumor has it that Obama is grooming the Sunstein character as a future Supreme Court justice. We learned that Sunstein is to the left even of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. He says so many things that are akin with Mussolini and Mao Zedong that our very freedom itself is at stake. And yet there was hardly a ripple in the media when this moral faker, Cass Sunstein, was ushered into this most powerful of all positions. And Ellis Washington writes, because people ascribe a degree of respectability to academics, intellectuals, philosophers, and scholars, they can disregard the rights of the people much easier than a naked tyrant. He said, in fact, Rousseau, Darwin, and Nietzsche can go places that Hitler, Stalin, Chavez, and Obama could never dream. And so here we have Cass Sunstein, now in charge of all laws, regulations rather, past, present, and future. The man is a clear and present danger to your freedom. He believes that animals should be permitted to bring suit with human beings as their representatives. He believes that animals should have their own attorneys in a court of law, paid for by the abused taxpayers. Sunstein spent his entire career, according to Ellis Washington, inventing rights for rats, dogs, and pigs that would make the Constitution's framers spin in their graves. He has a view of the right to bear arms as follows. He says, my coming view is that the individual right to bear arms reflects the success of an extremely aggressive and resourceful social movement and has much less to do with good standard legal arguments than it appears. And that's why I told you that good standard legal arguments can get us, lose all of our freedoms. The law is an ass, and this man, of course, represents exactly what the great essayist meant when he said the law is an ass. In 2008, this character, Sunstein, co-authored Nudge, Improving Decisions About Health, Wealth, and Happiness. And he wants to help people make better choices in their daily lives. And what that means is anybody's guess. He means you're too stupid to live your own life. And so Sunstein... Oh. Did you find that reference?
Savage.
Dillililililit.
Yeah.
Dillililililit.
Yeah.
Oh, little girl of mine.
EGIF, welcome to the Savage Nation. Well, I think this weekend I'm going to do a little night driving. Top down, burn off some steam. That's what I'll do. Whatever else you... How do you burn steam off? Go out on the boat, drive a... I like machines to help me burn off steam. I bicycle, but I don't know. I come back exhausted. Go on a boat ride, I come back elated. How does that work? Is running supposed to make you feel better? Bicycling supposed to make you feel better? I enjoy it, but you sweat, the clothes get ruined. Go on a boat, I come back clean. Go out in a convertible at night with the top down, cool air on my face. I come back clean, I feel better. So what are you going to do? The moth in the ear scares me a little bit. I'll tell you why. Because I don't know if I got it out. I don't feel anything. But I have a Stephen King nightmare now. Like the moth is in there. It's laying eggs. Larvae are going to grow and they're going to come out of my ears and eyes and your nose like in months to come. Nah, come on. I mean, this is Paranoiaville. Barbara, Wisconsin, welcome to the program.
Hi. I want to tell you about my husband's story with a moth.
Oh, God.
One flew in his ear one night, and so I called the emergency in our area, and they told me to have my husband go in a dark room, put a flashlight in the ear, and the moth came right flying out of his ear.
Oh, my God. So I, like a fool, went right to sleep in a dark bed. It probably probably burrowed into my ear.
Yes.
Oh, my God. That's an A. So the moth, yeah, but I probably killed it, I would think, because I was digging while it was flipping.
Was doing that too, and he said he could feel it inside his head.
Oh, stop! Don't! This could turn into something nightmarish. Now I have to see the ear guy over the weekend. Just what I needed. Again, all right. Thanks for the call. God in heaven. All right, let's go back to Cassie. You talk about a moth in the ear. How about Sunstein inside the government? New York, WOR. John, welcome to the Savage Nation.
This man has the potential to be as dangerous as you say is. I have a story from Ozone Park, Queens, where I'm from.
But this guy Sunstein is like a moth in the ear of America.
There was this gentleman that owned a pizzeria, you know, a hardworking Italian gentleman. He was coming home with the daily receipts. These two thugs pushed him into his house, pistol whipped him.
Right, his son got killed this week. I read that story. What was that all about?
They filed them. What happened was a lady rang the doorbell to ask for directions. The son and mother would not let him in. So finally, the guy pulled up in the driveway with all the money. They pushed him into the doorway. The son intervened, and he was shot right in the head, and they fled the scene without taking a cent.
So what was this about? Was this an organized hit or what?
Sounds like it. I mean, they don't know yet. They're still investigating it, but it sounds like an organized hit. Like
Now, I saw the story. It's a tragedy to see this happen, but what does it have to do with Cass Sunstein?
Because Cass Sunstein doesn't want anybody, law-abiding citizens, to have businesses. He's trying to stop people from getting handguns legally. He doesn't want people to bear arms.
No, I thought about that. What if the mother had a gun? What if the father had carried a weapon? What if the son had come out blasting instead of sitting there getting shot himself? I know what you're saying. I hear you. Of course I hear you. I hear you, John. I thank you very much for the call. No, I thought the same thing. The right to bear arms very definitely is an American right. And if this Cass Sunstein tries to take away the secret, you know, look, a lot of things could happen to people. But there's a couple of things that would trigger a disaster for the nation. One of them would be this man thinking he's above the law and he's going to take away the Second Amendment. That's all. And I don't even want to talk about it right now. I really don't. I got moths to worry about. Did you hear about the Acorn operation? Housing seminar. And we have sound of this. No one cares about the prostitute thing. Do we still have that? How about the CNN saying that there was a gunboat shooting on the Potomac River? Let's hear clip 4, that mistake today of CNN. Let's have 04.
Start this morning with a security scare on the anniversary of the September 11th attacks.
Breaking news right now, and the Coast Guard is very much on alert and, quite frankly, engaged at this time.
We have seen at least one boat come up the Potomac and challenge the Coast Guard and try and get into that security zone.
This is pretty incredible. I have to say that as the story is developing here, and I had learned that rounds had actually been fired. I mean, that really changes the story.
At one point, we did hear radio transmissions of someone saying, bang, 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 bang.
Turn them off. Shut them up. Shut the chicks up. They got it all wrong. It was a training exercise of the Coast Guard, but they already turned it into another 9/11, the news girls. I mean, they wear glasses. You know, these girls wear glasses that are blanks. They don't even have prescriptions in them. They wear them to look smarter. It's a reversal. In other words, they can't do what they used to do in the past anymore. They're too old. So they make them news girls because the legs don't go so fast. It's an interesting phenomenon. Men are sometimes tricked from behind by legs, and women, they turn around, they're like 75, but the legs look good. So they use them on Fox News, for example, with lipstick and glasses. They put blank glasses on their head. That's how... What am I talking about here? What else do we have? So they faked that one. They got that wrong. What else? Federal deficit hits $1.38 trillion through August. What the heck? What's the difference when it hits? It's only fake money to a university professor named Obama, a lecturer. He never met a payroll in his life. What does he know about that? What do you care about that? How about we have the 34th coolest summer on record? And yet the people who drank seltzer as children don't even understand that. Summer temperatures today are low. For the summer, they already calculated them. 34th coolest on record. And yet, the fanatics still insist on global warming. And I figured it out. I broke the code. It was the moth, I think, last night. I figured it out. They're not really frightened of global warming and melting glaciers. They have a carbon dioxide phobia. That's why they keep talking about carbon dioxide. And it's all traced back to the kitchens of Brooklyn where they grew up. And it was the seltzer, which is carbonated, the excessive carbonation went to their brains, the carbon. I was thinking about with the moth. The excessive carbon dioxide from the seltzer that they grew up with while they were being inculcated with communist philosophy by their Uncle Mo, who then sent them to a communist training camp in the Potomac, in the Poconos. Many of these boys were raised by communist parents and uncles, the ones now in the White House. I named them affectionately Red Diaper Doper Babies. It wasn't bad enough that they were Red Diaper Babies. That was a given. But then the 60s came along and they started doing dope, you know, and you add dope to the red diaper and you got RDDB. Now they're in the White House. So now with the global warming insanity, they're not really afraid of global warming. They have a phobia about carbon dioxide when you think about it, because that's their obsession. It's carbon dioxide. And the reason they have it is the seltzer. I think too much carbon dioxide was ingested as a youth and they wound up fearing carbon dioxide and they had to come up with an excuse for their paranoia of carbon dioxide, so they made up global warming to go with it. Does that make sense to you? I think I broke it. I broke the code finally on the obsession. So look, I'm the granddaddy of this discovery. I wrote Liberalism as a Mental Disorder years ago, 5 years ago. You see people trying to copy it when they talk. They say liberalism is a cult, and they say liberalism is a this and a that, but I'm the granddaddy of all this. That's why I don't attack liberals anymore. It's a waste of time. They run the world. The whole world is moving towards a Stalinist slave labor camp under the guise of goodness and graciousness from liberalism. But we're losing our freedoms on a daily basis, and all I can do is try to alert you about it, that's all, because you can't do anything about it. That's all. Look at Madoff. You say, how did Madoff escape it? He grew up with the same seltzer root. The same seltzer man that poisoned so many young minds that went to Yale, Harvard, and Berkeley years later in the law schools. I mean, Madoff had carbon dioxide, seltzer, squirting, undershirts, uncles, garment trades. How did he wind up not getting poisoned by seltzer? Aha. Now, there's the thing. It could be that there's certain people who have a specific enzyme that prevents carbon dioxide from crossing the blood-brain barrier. That would be Madoff, for example. With him, it turned out to be like turning him into a monster, evil genius in robbing people. In other words, the seltzer... The carbon dioxide, he had an enzyme maybe. In years to come, they'll study Madoff. They'll find out that he... Sorry. I enjoy these kinds of things. And because, you know, the Chinese do this. They play word games, mind games, which is why they're running the world. We live in a society where if you do a thing like this, all right, Mike, cut it out. Stop with the word games. Just stick to bashing liberals and Obama. That's what we're tuning in for. No, I'm not Chinese, but I understand what the word games and pictograms are. I'm the only pictographic host in America, in the American media. I speak in images rather than in words. You don't understand that. So when I say I have a moth in my ear, I'm actually talking about Cass Sunstein in the ear of the American mind. You didn't understand it. I started with the moth in the ear. Then I told you about Cass Sunstein. And what I was trying to do was make the psychological connection between a moth in the ear and a guy who's bugging America inside the brain of the White House, taking over the country, buzzing, and this Stephen King coming out of your ears, nose, and eyes. That's what he's going to do to you, in my opinion. I have a cold coming on now. Must be a weather change. And my bones hurt. See, I told you, as advanced as I am education-wise, with the higher degrees and the books and the writing, I still have a peasant's view of the world. Now, you could say that's what sinks me. On the other hand, you could say what makes me a great broadcaster. Because I keep one foot connected to the earth and one hand reaching for the heavens. You know what I'm saying? If you were to paint a picture of me, it would be one foot cemented to the earth and one hand grasping for the stars. And so when my bones start to hurt and I feel a change in my sinuses, I know the weather's changing. Thank God it's going to be a cool weekend. You could also go on the weather page. You could have gotten the same answer, too. I mean, bones and sniffing. My ear is killing me now. I brought it up. I have to go to the guy, the ear guy now. What if he's not available? I'm going to have a nightmare with the larvae and the ear. What if it's burrowing as I'm giving, like, eggs now as I think about it? Horrible thought. Florida, Trent, welcome to the Savage Nation. Trent, what's on your mind?
I just recently found you, Michael Savage. It's a privilege to talk to you.
Thank you. Very nice. You don't mind my comedic. You don't mind my comedic in the political arena movements, do you?
No, no, sir. No, sir. Not at all. The first time I listened to you, I was torn. I'm like, all right, is this guy a nut or is he right on? I've been listening. I kept listening. I realized that 99.9% of what you say is truth, actuality. And,
see, that's the problem. Where's the 0.1% again that we disagree on?
Well, I'm not even sure. I think it's just...
I'm joking. Come on. I'm just kidding. So what is it that you called about, Trent?
I called because I recently found out about a week ago I'm about to have a kid. My wife's pregnant. I'm all excited.
Ah, congratulations. An American breeder. Thank you. God bless you for having the guts to be married and have children.
There's about five of us left, so...
Yeah. Well, there's five white men left willing to have children.
I know. I'm Caucasian. I'm American. I stand up for everything America's great for, and there's about five or six of them. Anyway, I heard you talk about...
Well, I bet you can even hunt, Trent. I have the feeling you can even shoot a rifle.
I guarantee I can shoot a rifle. I married into a family of great American rednecks, and we go out and hunt. We fish. We clean. We kill. It's a great thing, sir. It's a great thing to be an American.
So you're having a baby, and you want me to comment upon what, Trent?
I've heard you talk about your book you wrote about raising kids, and
All right, you know what? I'm going to send you a copy of Healing Children Naturally. It's a copy that every parent should have in the world. See, now there's a book that is important to have if you're raising children. I wrote it in 1981, published in 81. I revised it a number of years ago. It's on my website, michaelsavage.com. It has... you know, recipes for children and when they get sick, what to do diet-wise and herb-wise and vitamin-wise. I believe it's a reference book that should be on every parent's shelf, everybody. This transcends politics. It's a brilliant book. And it's not just based upon my knowledge. It's based upon earlier knowledge of other doctors who understood natural healing. And it's a great addendum to medicine. I mean, I'm not saying throw away all of medicine. That's absurd. I'm saying that you should learn how to treat your children without medicine and use medicine as a last resort, not a first resort. But certainly don't eschew medicine. I had to use a big word just once in a while. I have to use a word that George Bush couldn't pronounce. Every once in a while, I have to try one. Sacramento, KSTE. Peter, welcome to the Savage Nation. Peter, are you there from Sacramento on KSTE? Welcome to the program. Gone with the wind. Boom. Sacramento. Mila, welcome to us on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael Savage.
Yes.
It's an honor to talk to you. I've been listening to you since I was 16 years old, and my parents didn't know I was listening to you.
How old are you now?
I'm 24.
Oh, my God. I had you for 8 good years.
I'm married, and I have a 4-year-old daughter, and I bought your Healing Children Naturally, and I love that book, and I go to it every time my daughter is sick, and I learned so much from it. Thank
does it work? Does it help you alleviate the symptoms and get her back to the norm?
Yes, it does. I hardly ever use Tylenol or drugs or anything like that.
God bless you. You're going to have a much healthier child as a result. Much of the kidney failure, the liver failure in the country today is from an overuse of these painkillers. It's frightening what the drug companies are doing to our population, let alone Prozac and Ritalin for the boys. Every quirk, every ache, every pain. Oh, take 2 of these. Take 4 of those. Take 6 of these. Take them 20 times a week. And then they wonder why we need kidney transplants and liver transplants. Let me tell you something. I could be a great advisor to Obama's health care reform in terms of alternative medicine. There's no one in the country better than me. There's a lot of Johnny-come-latelys. He puts me on that commission, although we disagree politically on everything. I could teach people in this country for $1 a year how to prevent many, many illnesses through proper nutrition and diet and herbs and vitamins and save billions and billions of dollars in medical costs. You want to see a man reach across the aisle? Let Obama reach across to Michael Savage. That's Dr. Michael Savage at that. Stay on the line. I'm sending you a free copy of Banned in Britain. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Eddie, my love, I love you so.
Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. I'm going to read a quote to you now. I hate people who read quotes, but I'm going to violate my own. Samuel Johnson was a great essayist, I told you that. So here's what he wrote. A country is in a bad state, which is governed only by laws, because 1,000 things occur for which laws cannot provide, and where authority ought to interpose. Now, I know it's complicated. In a world of sound bites, in a world of rap music, in a world of twittering, in a world of illiterate morons in the media, it's very complicated. But basically what he's saying is the law is an ass. And Cass Sunstein, who is now the regulatory czar under Obama, is a man who says animals should be able to sue human beings, for example. So Samuel Johnson, the great essayist, the great essayist of hundreds of years ago, presciently knew that a man like Cass Sunstein would arise in America, teach at the University of Chicago, and that we'd have another dimwit who would appoint him to be in charge of all laws in the United States of America. So he wrote hundreds of years ago, Johnson, a country is in a bad state, which is governed only by laws, because 1,000 things occur for which laws cannot provide. And where authority ought to interpose, meaning it's an opportunity for a power grab, which is why Obama, the lawyer, has taken a power-grabbing maniac, in my opinion, and put him in charge of all regulatory affairs in the United States of America. So get ready for craziness like you can't believe. Sunstein advocates a second Bill of Rights. He argues that the Internet may weaken democracy because it allows citizens to isolate themselves within groups that share their own views and experiences, and so cut themselves off from any information that might challenge their beliefs. Sunstein notes that we should celebrate Tax Day. Taxes are good. Sunstein says that we should celebrate high taxes. Sunstein says that the Second Amendment should be eliminated. Sunstein says liberty, freedom, and natural law are irrelevant concepts, and they're counterproductive to the vision that he and Obama have for you. So Mussolini, Stalin, and Mao have nothing on Cass Sunstein, the new regulatory czar appointed by the law professor Obama. Have a nice evening.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
All right, well, here's what I saw today. I mean, 9/11, right? CNN reports that there was firing, shots fired on the Potomac River by the Coast Guard at a boat, just as Obama's motorcade was going over a bridge. Then we hear from the White House that it's bullcrap, that Gibbs says, check before reporting to CNN, that it was a routine training exercise. What do you think? Was this really a problem or a training mission?
To me, it sounds like another iteration of the plane cruising over Manhattan. It sounds like a bungle by the administration.
Did you read the illiterate press release from the Coast Guard? It's like in bureaucraties, and it's illiterate. It sounds like they got some gutter rat and put him in charge of the Coast Guard PR. You've never seen anything like this. This is the government at work, and they're going to run our health care? Another genius.
Yeah.
I guess he was studying his retirement brochure.
I think so.
Well, there's another video showing Acorn officials helping a pimp sneak a prostitute into America. Even though there was no real prostitute, they went for it. And it's unbelievable to me. You think there'll be investigation of Acorn by Obama since they put him in office? Think Chavez, and you'll get your answer. Whenever you want to know what's going to happen in America, think Chavez is running America. You'll get your answer. You can predict it. You don't need a crystal ball. Just look to Venezuela. The government is looking into 100 stimulus fraud cases. 100? Only 100? Huh? Only 100, huh? And by the way, Rahm Emanuel is getting ready to ram the health reform, the socialized medicine, down the throats of America. The people be damned. Because that's the way it was done in Father Russia. You know. That's where Father Russia, that's where he learned in Father Russia.
He was the one who tracked down Joe Wilson and made him apologize.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Terrific fella. Let's see. Texas governor sends Texas Rangers to the Mexican border, accusing the federal government of failing to adequately secure the border. God bless him. Texas governor is my favorite governor in America. And did you read that Castro, loved by Spielberg and the Hollywood vermin? Castro has arrested a dissident, a protester who said that we're starving here, we could use food, to 2 years in prison. Shame on you, Steven Spielberg. You're a shame to your ancestors. You're a shame to your name. You liberals. How could they love Castro, these communist SOBs? How can they love this? What else do we see in the news here?
You mentioned that the Texas governor is trying to beef up the Border Patrol. Well, it looks like California could use a little of that because man police believe has been deported to Mexico up to 8 times, was arrested this week in Modesto after he allegedly pointed a gun at the house of his ex-girlfriend. 8 times he was arrested, deported.
And you mean the mayor of San Francisco hasn't hired him yet as a special assistant at $100,000 plus? We have talked about former Morgan Stanley banker convicted of insider trading. He's a small fish. Former Morgan Stanley managing director Du Jun was convicted of insider trading in Hong Kong's biggest criminal prosecution. But you'll notice that the former Morgan Stanley managing director in New York is flying around in a private jet and enjoying his retirement. Get that one?
Yeah.
South African runner is a hermaphrodite. Let's hear it for sexual ambiguity. And let's see, is there anything else in the news here? I mean, there's a lot of hot stuff that you wouldn't know about because it's buried. There's a very interesting article by Ralph Peters from the New York Post up on michaelsavage.com called Betraying Our Dead. And he says, instead of cracking down on Islamic extremism, we've excused it. Instead of killing terrorists, we free them. instead of relentlessly hunting Islamist madmen, we seek to appease them. He's talking about Obama and his gang. Okay? That's the story today on the Savage Nation. I mean, that's the big story. You got to read that linked up from the post on michaelsavage.com. You can see Banned in Britain and many, many other great stories.
Well, Charlie Rangel is back in the news. Apparently, some of his good friends are planning a rally this weekend in appreciation of his lifelong work on behalf of the people of Harlem and this country. So they're rallying behind him.
That's good. Well, although he's the head of the tax writing committee, he's a tax evader. Isn't that the way it works if you're a Democrat? How about today is the anniversary of 9/11, the eighth anniversary of the September 11th terror attacks by Islamic radicals. And people are crying at the Ground Zero, and they're laughing in San Francisco, still claiming the government did it. Can you imagine that? And half the people in the Obama administration believe the government did it. Of course, the last government, not this one. Only the last government's capable of such a thing.
Be interesting to find out how many of the other czars may have signed 9/11 truther petitions. Not just Van Jones, perhaps.
Yeah.
I guess Obama's putting the pressure on to let the governor of Massachusetts name a replacement immediately to Ted Kennedy, citing the need for health care reform. Obama has said that Deval Patrick, the governor of Massachusetts, should have the power to appoint an interim senator to fill the late Edward Kennedy.
Well, maybe they could get one of Mary Jo Kopechne's relatives to fill in for the deceased great Ted Kennedy. Wouldn't that be fitting?
I guess so. Apparently it's health care by any means necessary.
Mm-hmm. Columbia University endowment falls by 21%. Yay! Yale's endowment fell by 30%. Yay! Harvard's endowment fell by over 30%.
I wonder how UC Berkeley is doing. Maybe they've fallen the same way.
I don't know, but I wouldn't give them a dime. I'm going to leave it to a dog kennel or something.
They'll use it more wisely.
I'm going to leave it to an animal rights group rather than the University of California at Berkeley, my alma mater. Is there such a thing as an alma potter? All right, that's a Savage Nation.
Savage.
Joining us now is KT McFarland from ktmcfarland.com, and she wants to take a look on this date of September 11th, what we knew then and what we know now. But this time, she's looking at Iran and nuclear weapons. KT, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. It's great to be with you again on the Savage Nation, particularly on September 11th, because I think it's important to look at September 11th in the eyes of what we didn't see. We didn't see it coming. We had pieces of that puzzle beforehand, but we never put them together. And I think we're in a similar situation now, Michael, because this time it's with nuclear weapons in Iran. The pieces are there to the puzzle, but the president and his advisors aren't putting them all together, or if they are, they're not concerned enough to act decisively to preempt them. I'm talking about Iran's relentless quest for nuclear weapons. It's intensifying into a gathering storm, and if it is not stopped, Iran will have nuclear weapons within the next year or so. Iran at this stage needs three things for a nuclear weapon. It needs enriched uranium, which, as we know, they're doing at an accelerating pace. They need a long-range missile, which they've already successfully tested. And they need the blueprint to pull it all together. Now, we have long suspected that they got a major assist on that blueprint a few years ago from Pakistan's Dr. A.Q. Khan, who's a nuclear physicist and the Pakistan nuclear weapons godfather. He has recently been released from house arrest in Pakistan, and nobody's sure where he is or whether he is again assisting Iran's nuclear program. So while we don't know how close they are to nuclear weapons, we know that they're within a year or two, with or without Dr. Khan's assistance. So far, Obama has made five attempts to engage Iran in negotiations, and every single time he's been rebuffed. His inaugural address, his speech to the Iranian people, the Cairo speech, and now we find out he's sent two letters to Ahmadinejad. And we've just learned that last week Ahmadinejad said, as far as he was concerned, the nuclear program is off the table in any further negotiations. In other words, he's going for nuclear weapons, and that's the end of discussion as far as Iran is concerned. So, Michael, where does that leave us? Well, we know there's a growing link between Iran and Hugo Chavez of Venezuela. We know Iran is training Venezuelan military, and Venezuela is in turn fronting for the Iranian financial transactions. In fact, even the very liberal New York District Attorney Robert Morgenthau, who heads the office in charge of investigating terrorist-related financies, he has signaled the alarm on a growing Iranian-Venezuelan connection. So, what's left? Okay, Obama could continue to hope against hope that Iran will come around and negotiate away its nuclear program. He's declared September, the end of September, as a deadline for Iran to agree to unconditional negotiations. And if that deadline passes, which at this point seems quite likely, Obama does nothing. In effect, if he's seen as conceding Iran's nuclear weapons program and all that entails, that will set off a nuclear arms race in the most dangerous and unstable part of the world, as Saudi Arabia, Egypt, even Turkey rush to get their own nuclear weapons. We'll see a much more aggressive Iran in the region, threatening Iraq as we withdraw, threatening moderate Arab states, and most certainly and obviously threatening Israel, which they do on a weekly basis. They threaten Israel with extinction. Now, Obama could do something else. He could ratchet up the sanctions against Iran. So far, we've had sanctions through the UN. None have worked because primarily Russia and China refuse to go along or go along with any sanctions with teeth because both Russia and China have lucrative trade with Iran. Russia sells them nuclear enrichment technology and weapons, and China buys their oil. In fact, the Russian foreign minister has just come out and said that as far as he was concerned, Iran nuclear weapons were off the table as well, and as were sanctions. So I think we're going to have very little cooperation from the Russians on trying to do increased sanctions, which is what Obama's been holding out.
Well, why wouldn't an embargo work on Iran?
Okay, so maybe we do alone go along with a gasoline embargo. My worry now is that it's a little too little and it's too late. Because while Iran does have to import gasoline, nearly half of their gas comes from abroad, a gasoline embargo is tough to enforce. And we know that Iran has, in the last several months, been stockpiling oil. So if we have an embargo on gas to Iran, we might have to even potentially to do a barricade around Iran. But what would happen? Well, it could take many months for Iran to feel the pain. It could take them... They could decide that this would be a rallying point for the Iranian people to support their leaders against America rather than to overthrow their leaders. And the final thing about any kind of a gas embargo, it's working against the clock because we know Iran is continuing to work on its nuclear program and they will very soon be at the breakout stage. So we're down now to the final issue. Does Israel bomb Iran's nuclear sites? Or do we let Israel do it and kind of look the other way? Well, even if such an attack were successful, it would probably only set Iran's nuclear program back a few years. And it would certainly trigger a reaction from Iran. They'd let Hezbollah and Hamas loose on Israel. There's no question about that. And they would probably mine the Strait of Hormuz, through which 40% of the world's oil supply travels. Now, that would shoot the price of oil up to the sky, and it would wreak even more havoc on the world economy. So at this point, we have waited so long that there are now no good options remaining with Iran. And it's likely to reach a crisis point within the next couple of weeks. And that's something that President Obama is loath to have to deal with, but I'm afraid he's going to have to deal with that at the same time as Afghanistan.
Thanks for the report, KT.
So, Michael, it's been great to be with you again and on this very sad day of September 11th. I wish you all the best.
On to other topics. The dance goes on. Conservatives now outnumber liberals in all 50 states, says Gallup poll, and yet we're led around like bulls with rings in our nose by a very small cadre of mandarins. You say, well, what are mandarins? Why have I used the phrase mandarins? Because, again, I have to take you back to ancient China. China, in the year approximately 1000, was a thriving nation with tremendously advanced technology. I believe they had six-masted sailing ships while the Vikings were still rowing, by and large, with one mast. They were advanced in so many ways. And then what happened was very strange in China. In a very short period of time, a bureaucracy arose of mandarins who, think of them as long fingernails, very effete, very effeminate, who kept themselves apart from the people, who despised the peasants who actually grew the food, and the workers who actually did anything, looked down upon them the same way, let's say, Charles Schumer looks down upon town hall protesters, looks down upon them the same way that this fraud, turncoat, Arlen Spectator, has the nerve to say that the town hall protesters are not Americans. In other words, they looked down on the real people. They spit on them from their perches. And these mandarins started to put out laws and rules, in other words, red tape, which slowly but surely strangled ancient China. And in a short period of time, it was about, 150 years, I believe, if my memory doesn't fail me, 150 years, that China, which would, at that time was so advanced and making so many strides in inventions and commerce, suddenly became strangled. The country was no longer innovative. It couldn't produce because the bureaucracy of its time, the democrats of ancient China, in essence, crippled the country with laws, regulations, and fear. They used fear tactics. That's how 40,000 mandarins controlled at the time, I think it was 30 or 60 million people. Now think about it. 40,000 mandarins controlled 60 million people at the time. How many mandarins are controlling us? How many mandarins are there in the U.S. government that actually tell you, or rather control you on a daily basis? How many mandarins are there in the federal, state, and local governments? They don't represent the people. They represent some other interests, but not the interests of the people. That's why there's a revolt going on. You know, the left used to talk about the prairie fire. That was their big phrase, prairie fire. That was a liberal thing, prairie fire. What they meant by that was grassroots, a grassroots revolt. We have a prairie fire. It's coming from the conservative prairie. It's not coming from the liberals. They own the government. They are the mandarins. The prairie fire that is now starting to rage in this country, which will soon be a bonfire and not of the vanities, is coming not from the left, as they predicted, but from the right. And so, my friends, when you read a new Gallup poll, and you know Gallup is not a really liberal or a conservative organization, I think that they're middle of the road, but they say self-identified conservatives outnumber self-identified liberals in all 50 states of the Union, according to the Gallup poll. And at the same time, more Americans nationwide are saying this year that they are conservative than have made that claim in any of the last 4 years. People are proud to stand up to this imposter, Obama. They're proud to stand up to Arlen Specter. They're proud to stand up to Howard Dean. They're proud to stand up to Barbara Boxer. They're proud finally to stand up and say no more to Dianne Feinstein. They're proud to stand up to the left-wing cabal of mandarins that have tried to hoodwink them. And you're only seeing the beginning of it. This prairie fire will become a bonfire very soon. Now, despite the Democrat Party's political strength, the Democrats have overplayed their hand. They have tried, first of all, they've showed their hand. That's number one. Then they tried to do too much. It's the anniversary, 8 years now, of the Islamo-fascist attack on America on 9/11/01. But look, let's try something lighter. Joining us now is our eye on Hollywood, James Herson, with a new update on what's going on.
Thanks, Michael. It was the wise Latina, Justice Sotomayor, at her Supreme Court debut in a case that involves a feature film about Hillary Clinton, and Senators John McCain and Russ Feingold were sitting in the audience. Now, that's an interesting case. Now, I know listeners of the Savage Nation are concerned about free speech, particularly after the way the UK has blatantly disrespected it, as outlined in your new expose, Banned in Britain. Well, if you care about free speech, listeners, this is a case you need to know about and follow. Sotomayor's first case was a special hearing set up by the court last term. It was an unusual session in which the court ordered a previously heard matter to be argued again, but more narrowly this time. And the case has resulted in the forming of an unusual coalition. The coalition includes the ACLU and the National Rifle Association, the AFL-CIO, and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Each of these organizations is on the side of restoring free speech. I have filed a brief as an attorney of record in the case. In March 2009, the court in this case, it's called Citizens United versus FEC, heard these oral arguments on whether a movie which took a critical view of the then presidential candidate Hillary Clinton could be regulated as a campaign ad.
Well, what's at the center of this case?
The case centers around this documentary that was produced by the conservative group Citizens United. The film, Hillary the Movie, has been described by the proponents of campaign regulations as a 90-minute attack ad. But wouldn't that description also aptly apply to the movies of Michael Moore or maybe Oliver Stone and so many others in Hollywood? Well, the Federal Election Commission barred the group that made this movie from distributing the film on television. Ted Olson, the former Solicitor General, argued that the case goes to the heart of free speech rights in this country. Here's what he said. We have wrapped up that freedom, smothered that freedom with the most complicated set of regulations and bureaucratic controls. And hey, Chief Justice John Roberts didn't give people a lot of comfort who like campaign finance laws. He said, quote, we don't put our First Amendment rights in the hands of an FEC bureaucrat. It was a sentiment that appeared to hold sway with a majority of the nine justices on the bench, but not Sotomayor. She sat in the seat to the far left of the Chief Justice where the new justices have to sit, but unlike some other new justices like Clarence Thomas, she didn't stay quiet. She jumped in twice. She quizzed Olson, she quizzed lawyer Floyd Abrams, and she showed her cards. She was clearly against lifting campaign restrictions and restoring free speech. She even wondered out loud if the Supreme Court would do more harm than good if they ruled the campaign laws unconstitutional. The two senators who drafted the latest campaign finance laws, Senator John McCain and Senator Russ Feingold, they sat nervously in the Supreme Court chambers. Feingold said it was, quote, a very bizarre time for justices to reconsider these long-standing laws that have protected our democracy.
How do you think it's going?
Although the line of questioning by the justices would suggest that the court is leaning in the right way in favor of the filmmakers, the justices could rule narrowly and preserve the speech-choking campaign regulations, or they could honor the First Amendment and blow a hole in the so-called campaign finance laws. I mean, we can look for the decision to significantly impact next year's congressional elections. In my personal and legal assessment, the current campaign finance laws squelch speech in an obvious way. When the government claims it's okay to ban books and movies because of their political content, I mean, that's the very definition of a prior restraint. And that's what the First Amendment seeks to protect. It's called government censorship. Pure and simple. Hey, remember that text in that old forgotten document? You know, the one that clearly said these words, Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. Hey, Michael, maybe we should send a copy of that text to England. Back to you, my friend.
Hey, thanks for the report, James. This is the Savage Nation. See, Obama never worked in a factory. He was just picked by some powerful people in the world to become president. But he says that top income earners are just lucky. But you may not know it, but this lucky talk show host once worked in an ice cream factory. Let me explain to you what it's like. It's probably the worst job in the world, being on a production line in a factory. I should remind you, it's a tough job, and you have to have compassion and sympathy for poor people or people who don't speak the language who take these jobs. It's murder. It was in Long Island City, and it was an ice cream factory, and it was a hot summer. And the production line goes around in a conveyor belt. And I and a few of my friends worked in that factory along with, I think it was Puerto Rican women, by the way, largely on the production line. And the pit boss was an Italian, about 5'1", with a big mouth and mean. And he stood up on a platform over the production, the conveyor belt. So the boxes would come around, and you had, I don't know, whatever the number of seconds were, to pack 24 ice cream bars into the box. And you had to do it in a certain amount of time. Now, if you fumbled, you had to do this for hours on end. And let's say your mind was elsewhere, which it normally is, but you missed and dropped the bar. And he would stop the line, this guy up on the stand, and he'd start screaming, "You moron, you idiot. Look what you did to all the other workers, you stupid moron, you. You do it again, you're costing them money. Now start the line again." See, that's how America worked. When America was really good, we had guys like that pit boss who could call you a moron when you were an idiot or a moron, your mind was distracted. Today, of course, you can't call anyone a moron, even if they're a moron. Instead, you turn him into a home secretary in England, or you turn him into a senator or a congressman here from Minnesota. But that's how it worked in those days. I also had a teacher like that. He was an ex. We think he was an IRA member. We don't know. I won't mention his name. Jamaica High School, missing three fingers on the left hand, as Irish as they come, heavy brogue, wonderful teacher, math teacher. I remember to this day, he would read out your grades at the end of a test. He'd call your name out and make you come up to the front as he read the name, the grades in descending order. And believe me, if you got less than an 80 and you were called to that, by the time they got to you, you were sweating, you were red-faced, you grew pimples on your face in the 3 minutes it took for you to get up to that room. And you know what he said? "Well, you didn't do too well, did you, this time with a 68? Where was your mind? Up your behind?" You know, and he'd go on, he'd lace into you. And let me tell you something, when he got through with you, you didn't want to get a 68 on the next exam. You studied harder. But today, they'd arrest them for student abuse. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The media is getting increasingly forgetful of 9/11, but what they like to forget even more is how they responded to it originally. Do you remember how the Hollywood idiot Richard Gere responded?
I think in this situation right now, when we have the possibility of taking this energy, this horrendous energy that we're all feeling, and the possibility of turning it into more violence and revenge, we can stop that. We can take that energy and turn it into something else. We can turn it into compassion, into love, into understanding. That's apparently unpopular right now.
And you can bet that Hillary Clinton would like to forget how she was received at a concert in New York City right after the towers fell. Yet those were real Americans responding with real anger to real liberal weakness. Just like New York City fireman Mike Moran. Do you remember his words?
"Our friends, our neighbors, our relatives, they are not gone because they are not forgotten. And I want to say one more thing. In the spirit of the Irish people, Osama bin Laden, you can kiss my royal Irish ass."
Now, that's the kind of man the media would like to forget in the age of Obama. Among all the other news today is the revelation that yet another Acorn office tried to give housing counseling to a woman they believed was a prostitute. Listen to this Acorn employee as she gives advice for this working girl.
Boone and Boone, question. This gentleman is a law student at Georgetown. His partner is a working girl, and they have been turned down several times at different banks.
She has to show some type of income.
That's it.
Well, she has an income.
No, she has to show it.
Okay, let me help her now.
Okay.
Would you probably need to do something? She's self-employed.
Yes.
Okay. So what you need to do, has she filed taxes the last week?
No.
Okay, that's your challenge. Okay, what you got to do from this day forward, she needs to set herself up, you know what, in a sense. She needs to start keeping track of income, create a little name for herself, mm-hmm. and in business.
Uh-huh.
Okay, not the lady of the night thing, but create a name of a little company.
Did you hear that? create a company? The Acorn employee is advising that the prostitute incorporate her business? But wait, Acorn gets even deeper into it.
She is in a business.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I have a business. I have a trading ass name. I'm a sole proprietor. She's a sole proprietor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Her, whatever her name is, she can be Judy Joe, you know, LLC.
Mm-hmm.
You're not saying what it is that she does. She just provides service regardless to what it is. Okay? She provides a service.
That's okay. What America's based on is goods and services.
Yeah, it's a service.
This corrupt employee is trying to help someone she believes is a prostitute legitimize their business to evade taxes. These are the people who helped Obama get elected in Acorn. And do you think they will be investigated? Oh, sure. Sure they will. Now we're going to go to something a little lighter because I can't sustain this kind of focus for hours and hours and hours a day. I will tell you that living well is the best revenge. I mean, I can talk about lifestyle issues just to calm down a little bit because I do know how to relax. When I do go out, I know how to relax when I go out. And it's very rare. Maybe once a week I'll go out and, you know, I sit and relax. I have a bottle of wine. Actually, I'm drinking wine again. If you want to talk about alcohol, I mean. It leaves me with a hangover, but it feels good going down. Isn't that interesting? Why does wine, no matter what I drink, leave me with a hangover, but beer or vodka doesn't? It's an interesting phenomenon. I know the answer. It's the complexities, the fusel oils in wine. No matter what you get today, it's been tricked up in the winemaker's chemistry laboratory. They're not making wine the way. It's all like chemicals now, chemistry. I've been over to Aliotta's. I hadn't been there in a while. And Richie prepared for me himself. He went in the kitchen. I mean, it's one of the busiest kitchens he ever seen. Remember when I was a kid, there was a restaurant in New York called Mama Leone's. And I used to marvel at it. I once read a book about how in the heck could anyone cook. So I try to cook a meal for a couple of people, and to get the bread and the meal and the everything on the table at once is very hard. So how do you do it for hundreds of people at a time over and over again? So every time I go in the kitchen of a very busy restaurant, I'm always awed by it, frankly. Because it's amazing the skill it takes to produce everything to come out on time. So I ordered mussels marinara, which I got to tell you, there's no better mussels marinara in the world that I've tried than in that restaurant, Aliotta's. You say, well, why am I talking about it? Because I'm sick and tired of talking about the ACLU. I'm sick and tired of telling you what Obama's doing to America. I'm sick and tired of talking to myself and nobody else about being banned in Britain. I'm sick of telling you to go buy Banned in Britain. You know what? Don't buy the book. Do buy the book. It's not going to change, you know, my life one way or the other. I want you to read Banned in Britain so that you can see the story, the modern-day story of David versus Goliath. And I don't know how this ends. Don't you understand it's not over yet? Don't you understand that the story isn't over? It's an ongoing story. It's a work in progress. That's what I'm saying to you. And by buying the book and by owning the book, you're a part of this history. So I can only sustain this for so long. So as I say, I went into the place, and I ordered mussels marinara and a bottle of wine, good bread. And frankly, I was happy to be left alone and sit at a table and look at people and just eat and drink. But the mussels marinara is a magic. I didn't even eat anything else. I will tell you, I brought home a hamburger for Teddy, and he ate it for 3 nights in a row. He loves it. The dog really likes his meat. No matter how you try to give him that kibble, they don't like it as much as they like meat dogs. The truth is they're pure carnivores. They go berserk. It's like children who are raised as vegetarians. You put a chicken leg around them, they'll attack it on the table. And speaking of attacking it, I have an assistant that works, two assistants. So one of the young ladies, my computer wasn't working. I asked her to touch the button on the computer for me. The dog attacked her hand. He didn't bite her. He mouthed her. The other assistant, the young man, if he comes in here, he goes after his feet. Teddy does not like anybody in the radio studio. I don't know, they have these instincts. You can't get mad at him. I said, okay, Ted, they're friends, but he doesn't understand that. If anybody touches anything to do with my equipment or comes in the room, they're enemies. That's why they're wonderful. That's why they're loyal. That's why they're great. That's why they're not cats. That's why they're dogs. So what do you want to talk about? Food, mussels, marinara? You don't need Viagra. What do you want to talk about? Marinara sauce? You know, I should do a whole show on how to make a proper marinara sauce when you think about it. I don't like sweet sauces, but I frankly happen to know that even if people say there's no sweet, there is always a little bit in it. I prefer tart. Everything should be very tomatoey. And even though I said I was off tomatoes last week, I cheated. I went back on tomato sauce. I can't give everything. I realized. I thought about it over the weekend. I said, what, are you crazy? You're going to give up dairy? Okay, no big deal. Even though I love Parmesan cheese and Romano cheese and provolone. All right, I can give that up. I never liked milk. I don't eat ice cream. I can't stand it. But to give up tomato and tomato-based products, it's like, how can I do all of this at once? I mean, sure, maybe I'd be healthier in a certain way, but it's like a robot. I mean, who wants to live like that? What, just put oil in my joints? Last night I saw a show on saints on the earth. They are doctors from, I think this Dr. Stein from the Los Angeles. I was watching TLC before Mad Men. I said, all right, I'll watch Mad Men again. A stinker. This series is done. It's toast. It's garbage. They ran out of ideas already. Now, I got to tell you, Matthew Weiner is a brilliant man. He did some of the best writing that television has ever seen. They're out of ideas already. It's a stiff. And also, I'll tell you something else. To take her, Grace Kelly, the Grace Kelly lookalike, and make her pregnant, what are they doing that for? She was attracting too much attention? As one of them said, oh, look, Grace Kelly swallowed a basketball. I have nothing against pregnant women. I think they're beautiful. But you don't do that to an actress and expect her to have the same magnetism as she would have had without it. I mean, let's level with each other. Now already they're moving in directions that at the end of the show, it's over already. I couldn't wait till it was over. I couldn't wait till it was over. This is the Savage Nation. Play some rock and roll.
1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're going to rock around the clock tonight. Put your glad rags on. Join me home. We'll have some fun when the clock strikes. We're going to rock around the clock tonight. We're going to rock, rock, rock till broad daylight. We're going to rock around the clock tonight. When the clock strikes 2, 3, and 4, if the band slows down, we'll yell for more. We're going to rock around the clock tonight. We're going to rock, rock, rock till broad daylight. We're going to rock around the clock tonight.
With God's will and your listenership, I shall return. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.